This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. I would wager to guess that the nation's productivity levels have plummeted this morning. So many Americans with bleary eyes heading off to their daily activities after obsessively checking results all night long. Donald Trump didn't give his victory speech until around 2:45 this morning, after he said he'd been called by Secretary Clinton, who conceded the race. And we heard from Hillary Clinton and President Barack Obama earlier today. So if you were focused on the national races, you were up pretty late. But even if you were just focused on local races, you were still probably pretty tired. Sue Minter gave her concession speech in the 11 o'clock hour.
The battle continues. Our voices still need to be heard, even though mine is practically gone. So all I can say is I feel so much gratitude and appreciation and no regrets, total pride. Onward.
Thank you.
Her speech at Democratic headquarters was followed immediately by a victory speech from Phil Scott over at the Republican headquarters.
We knew if we treat voters with respect they deserve, brought our positive pro-growth, pro-jobs, affordability agenda to every county, every city, every town in the state, we could win. And that is exactly what we did.
So Vermont has a new governor, as well as a new lieutenant governor, progressive Democrat David Zuckerman. He beat out Republican Randy Brock. In other races, Democratic incumbents won big. Patrick Leahy for U.S. Senate, Peter Welch for Congress, Beth Pierce for treasurer, Doug Hoffer for auditor, Jim Condos for Secretary of State. And we have a new attorney general. In that open seat, Democrat T.J. Donovan beat out Republican Deb Bucknam. Today on the show, we're going to go over the statewide results as well as how Vermonters are feeling about the presidential election. You can join us with your thoughts on any of the races or any of the issues in your town. Maybe you voted on other ballot items, school district consolidation. Maybe you live in Burlington and you voted on the TIF district. Let us know how you voted and why and what you're thinking and feeling today, how we move forward as a state and a nation. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. And I'm joined for this hour by VPR News Director John Dillon, 7 Days columnist and political editor Paul Heinz, and VT Digger founder and reporter Ann Galloway. John, Paul, Ann, nice to have you with us. I'm sure you're all bleary-eyed, too.
Thanks, Jan.
We are.
Indeed.
Well, thanks for being here. And let's start talking about some of the statewide races, since that's where we excel. And we can also let our listeners chime in on national races and how they're feeling about the presidential race. I know that's on the minds of a lot of people here and in other states. We here at VPR were initially a little bit surprised seeing some of the early results come in that showed a wider margin for Phil Scott in the governor's race than had been predicted or expected. Ann Galloway, were you surprised to see how big Phil Scott won by?
Well, it's, I guess, yes and no. I think the VPR poll had the two candidates in a dead heat, and then later WCEX said that Phil Scott looked like he had a 7-point lead. So it was really hard to tell running up to the election. But I think the conventional wisdom was that Bernie Sanders was going to help to drag Sue Minter across the finish line. He went on a tour with Sue and other candidates. And she also had ads from President Obama that I think people thought would help her tremendously. And she also, you know, led a pretty aggressive campaign. And so there were a lot of people who believed that she would do better than she did. I think it was surprising to see how few districts she ended up taking in the end. So I guess I was surprised a little bit by the margin, but not necessarily by the win altogether.
John Dillon, what about you?
Yeah, I think I was sensing fairly early on when we saw results from her hometown and then
Yeah, she lost Waterbury.
She lost Waterbury. She lost a couple of towns in Chittenden County that probably she obviously needed to win. I think there's some lessons here that, you know, for us in media to keep in mind and take away from this, which is the value of endorsements and just mentioned Bernie Sanders, we all thought, wow, you know, he's out 2 weekends in a row barnstorming for Sue Minter and other Democrats. What a culmination of the dream for the progressive Democrat coalition. You know, this is going to make a huge difference. The Bernie momentum didn't transfer to Sue Minter at all. The ads didn't work. She had a huge field organization in the Democratic Party. That didn't work. So I think we overestimated that, the prowess of all of that, and underestimated Phil Scott's popularity, his just basic popularity, the fact that he's won elections statewide before. And but yes, I was surprised by the margin of Scott's victory.
We got a note from Warren who says, thank you, Vermonters, for saying no to that disgusting carbon tax. It's already difficult enough to afford to live here. Supporting Phil Scott, Warren was, Sue Minter had not said she would support a carbon tax, but it became an issue in the campaign. In the VPR debate, Phil Scott pressed Sue Minter frequently about, would you veto a carbon tax? Joe wrote in to say, Sue Minter ran a dirty campaign, swimming in PAC money. She didn't understand that the people of Vermont don't want to be a dumping ground for industrial renewable power for our wealthier neighbor states. Paul Heinz, Joe brings up this issue of a dirty campaign. And do you think Sue Minter lost because Vermonters don't like dirty campaigning? That seems to be a narrative that has started, and I'm not sure that's really what's going on here. What do you think?
No, I would disagree with that. I mean, I think that you could look at both sides in this campaign, and they were both pretty dirty. And I don't mean just the candidates, but the outside forces that were supporting them.
Yeah, maybe particularly the outside forces doing
that's
that
right,
dirty
especially
work.
The Democratic Governors Association and the Republican Governors Association. I don't think I'd try to say one was more or less negative than the other. They did what they do, which is they go into states and they run pretty negative campaigns and allow the candidates themselves to remain somewhat more positive. So I don't really think it was that. I agree with John that this has a lot to do with Phil Scott's inherent popularity, his name recognition. But I think if you step back a little bit, the real thing we saw here was just a very typical result in Vermont. Every time there's been an open governor's seat since 1962, control has switched to the party that has been out of power. And I think there's just sort of a natural inclination in Vermont to go from a period of expansion to one of slowing down government programs, government spending. And I think what you saw here was basically probably a reaction to 6 years of Democratic rule, of some real liberal changes in the state. And I think everyone – or not everyone, but I think obviously a majority of people in Vermont who voted were ready to take a pause.
And we got a note from a listener named John who says it'll be fascinating to see how strongly the new governor stands up for all people in relation to the new president. Phil Scott was no fan of Donald Trump. What do you think he's going to do given the national politics we're seeing?
Well, I don't expect him necessarily to change his stance on Trump, but it does mean that he's going to have to work with the president on some level, depending on what kinds of issues come up for the state. I mean, if, for example, we needed FEMA money, or we wanted to renegotiate the all-payer waiver, or there are a number of issues that come up in which the state needs to work directly with the federal government. And so he's going to have to find a way to work with that administration, even though clearly he was not willing to come out publicly and support Trump as president even after he became the nominee.
In fact, he even went so far as to write in John Kasich for president yesterday when
That's
he voted,
right.
Which I think was a real signal to Vermonters. I think he has to be a little bit careful here. Obviously, Donald Trump is going to be the next president, but Trump is not popular in Vermont. Clinton defeated Trump here 56-30. So Phil Scott will have to keep some distance. And I think I'm guessing here, but I think probably a lot of Vermonters saw his willingness to distance himself from Trump as a mark of independence. I think that the Democrats really failed at tying him to the National Republican Party and to the National Republican presidential nominee.
Listeners, we're looking at the election results up and down the ballot, and you can share your next day feelings. Are you pleased with the results? Pleased with some of the results? Democrats, are you feeling despondent? Republicans, what about you? Some of you thrilled, some of you maybe not so thrilled. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. You can also tweet at Vermont Edition. Thomas is calling in from Moriah, New York. Hi, Thomas. What are you thinking?
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead, Thomas. What are you thinking?
Oh, okay, so I was just seeing a lot of conversations this morning about it just seems like we're pushing each other further and further away, and that worries me because I hoped that today and obviously in the coming days and years that we can, reverse the damage that has been done, because I've seen families literally torn apart because of this, because of this race. And I find that to be awful.
Yeah, Thomas, thanks for calling in and sharing your thoughts. John Dillon, what do you think? I mean, there does seem to be a polarization, certainly nationally. And, I mean, if you just look at what people are saying on social media, you can see this divide. And you can see friends and family still finding it very hard to come together. And especially today, really, I've seen a lot of playing the blame game. It's Democrats to blame. It's Bernie Sanders to blame. It's Republicans to blame. I mean, you could take your pick, depending on what your politics are, if you're trying to find blame.
Well, yeah, there's a tremendous amount of blame casting. I guess it's up to everyone to try and reach out to someone whose politics are completely different and talk to them. That tone was sort of being set, you could argue, by Donald Trump last night. President Obama in his remarks today talked about an orderly transition. We've got to work with the next president, the president-elect. So it's trying to be set from the top. It's an interesting reporting project to look and talk to Vermont Trump voters and about why they did that, and vice versa. I know that's going on nationally. From being in Cleveland at the RNC. My overwhelming sense from being there is just how divided the country is. That hasn't changed. I don't think it's going to change by, the personal dialogue that I've talked about, but it's a start.
Let's go to Betty calling in from Rutland. Hi, Betty. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning. Good afternoon, whichever it is. Well, obviously, the newscasters and anybody that had anything to do with news missed the boat because nobody listens to the people.
Tell me more about what you mean by that, Betty.
Well, everybody wanted the Democrats. They wanted Hillary. They wanted Sue Minter in Vermont. So it was shoved down our throats continuously. But, we still can think for ourselves. We know how to read, we know how to listen, we know how to turn the TV or the radio or whatever our choice is on or off. And now the people have spoken. And yes, people should have got to set aside their feelings. That doesn't mean they're going to get rid of them. But they've got to work together.
Betty, are you happy with the results both nationally and statewide?
Statewide, definitely. Nationally, I voted for Trump because I don't like liars. And I really don't. He's not at the top of the list I would have chosen, but I thought he was better than the alternative.
Betty, I really appreciate you calling in. Paul Heintz, what are you thinking as you listen to Betty?
Well, I think Betty makes a good point as far as the national picture goes. I think I would disagree a little bit that there was a perception here in Vermont that Sue Minter was definitely going to win. The people I spoke to about this election before it happened seemed genuinely unsure. And, we referred to it as a close election. But I think the words we were really looking for was we just didn't know. You know, it was uncertain. There was a high degree of uncertainty here. You know, I don't think I can't think of a single person who really said, I think Suminter is going to win, or I think Phil Scott's going to win. I think people were really, really didn't know. And part of that in Vermont is that we have very little public opinion polling that is publicly available. So we've got very little data to work with. That's what I think.
Silas wrote in to tell us the Democratic National Committee should have replaced Hillary with Bernie when they had the time to do so, period. The Supreme Court alone was enough of a reason as a key issue to get Hillary out and replace her with all the obvious baggage she had with Bernie. You have to give credit to the political rookie Trump for trusting his instincts and pushing all the buttons from the start in order to take advantage of the discontent of many Americans who have been left behind as their jobs left the country. Lorianne says headlines today should read, DNC scheme backfires. I am so disgusted with what they did to Bernie and got away with it. They only have themselves to blame for Trump's victory. Shame on our Democratic Vermont politicians who participated in the several years of planning to get Hillary Clinton into the White House. Peter Welch deserves kudos, Lorianne says, for endorsing Bernie. And Phil Scott deserves kudos for not endorsing Trump. And Nichol says Trump's supporters have also been telling us that Trump won because he represents their otherwise unexpressed views. That's fine, but my question to these folks is why they believe this. If nothing else, Trump has repeatedly shown his willingness to make up facts and misrepresentations as he needs them. Why, indeed, how can we believe this is any different? Let's get another call in here from Steve in Bristol. Go right ahead, Steve.
Yeah, hi there. I think Trump's going to be good for the country in the long run because it's going to make everybody kind of have to be careful what they wish for because they just may get it. And also, I think that Trump is a genius in playing into the media because the media really is biased. I mean, I'm not a Trump supporter, but you know, it seems like every media outlet said Hillary was going to win, and there was a lot of just late-night TV shows that were very anti-Trump that weren't even political shows. And I think it's really going to stand the country on its ear as far as the media and what they expect from a president. And also, you know, Trump is a genius in catering to how the media works. I mean, I guess that the phrase, any publicity is good publicity, really worked for him. So I think that's a real big deal right now.
Steve, thanks for your thoughts. Listeners, we are talking today about the election results. We have a panel of Vermont journalists and you. You can call 1-800-639-2211 or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Let us know your thoughts. We're talking about the national election, but also statewide races and even within your community. What issues were you voting on? Who were you voting on to represent you in Montpelier? And are you happy with the results? You can tell us about what happened in your town. Call 1-800-639-2211. Coming up, we're going to hear a little bit about some big wind votes in Grafton and Windham. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We are chatting with a panel of Vermont journalists today about the results from Election Day 2016. We're hearing from VPR's John Dillon, VT Digger's Ann Galloway, and 7Days' Paul Heintz. If you have a question for them or want to share your reaction to the results or share the results from your town, call 1-800-639-2211 or post them on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Last night, Senator Patrick Leahy spoke to his supporters. It was no surprise that he won re-election to the U.S. Senate.
It's 6 years, but Marcel and I will never stop working for Vermont and never stop being so thrilled and so gratified for the trust you've instilled. Thank you very much.
His Republican challenger, Scott Milne, tried to run an upstart campaign on very little money. He did not win, but he joked with VPR reporter Al Keefe that he's made some progress since his run for governor 2 years ago.
This time I was called 1 minute after 7. Last time I was called 1 minute before 7. So my life cycle is 2 minutes longer this time around.
So there's some positivity there from Scott Milne. He actually made it to 701 this year, John Dillon, instead of 659. That's good, right?
Well, I guess you take what you can get. It's interesting question for me is what Scott Milne does next. He obviously had some appeal in 2014. It was a unique set of circumstances, I think, running against Peter Shumlin, where he did surprisingly well. And I think he thought, Scott Milne thought, that that would translate into an equally, or if not equally, a substantial gain against Patrick Leahy. But the circumstances were just so different. The imbalance there between a popular incumbent, seven-term incumbent, who's spent four decades getting his name known and has just brought home the bacon for Vermont versus a newcomer who had no money and no real issues other than Leahy's incumbency and his use of PAC money. So he didn't really have much to bring to the debate other than those two. And I think now, you know, what's his future? He's obviously got the political bug. Is he going to try to run for an office that he has a shot at?
I hear somebody taking a breath there, Anne Galloway or Paul Hines.
That was me.
Paul.
I'm going to jump in there if I could. I think that Scott Milne fundamentally misunderstood what the 2014 election was about. That was a referendum on Peter Shumlin. That wasn't about whether Vermonters wanted Scott Milne to be their next governor. And so we just didn't have that dynamic with Leahy. You know, the results here were pretty stark. Phil Scott, getting my Scots mixed up, Phil Scott outperformed Scott Milne by about 20 points. That is – Phil Scott is someone who's really well known in the state, has introduced himself, stands for something more concrete than Scott Milne did. I think it's also worth stepping back and just recognizing the historical import of this race last night. Patrick Leahy became just the fifth person in U.S. history to win an eighth term in the Senate. And at the end of this term, he will be the third longest serving senator in U.S. history. So it's pretty significant.
And currently the longest serving.
That's right.
Yeah.
You mentioned, Paul, getting your Scots mixed up. And I'll just jump in here to say on Monday we did a stress relief show for pre-election stress. Maybe that show is worth listening to if you're experiencing post-election stress. And we got some advice from Hotel Vermont on good cocktails to drink, and they've been serving some. So depending on whether you're feeling celebratory or despondent, you could go to the bar and order a Great Scott or a Sue Minter Julep. And, you know, if you're feeling like maybe comfort food is the way to go, we have some recipes from Katie Price Webster up on our Vermont Edition page. She offered a creamy mac and cheese recipe and a salted bourbon caramel. And if you're really stressed, I suppose you could put the caramel on the mac and cheese because, you know, whatever. And you can
along
go to,
with those cocktails.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good right
yeah.
Now.
You know, just fill up. Let's go to Maria in Bradford. Hi, Maria. Go ahead.
Hi there. I just had a comment I wanted to make back to the national election. I've never been so upset about the results of a race, I guess mainly because it affects my family personally. My partner is not only an immigrant, not only black, but also Muslim. And my son is half black and Muslim, and I'm just sad and really scared for the future for not only my family but other families like us that are, you know, not just traditional white families. And the things that you've heard Trump say throughout this election cycle, it just scares me what's going to happen going forward.
Maria, it's really hard to hear you with all of that emotion in your voice, obviously feeling very sad and scared, as you said it. So what now do you feel like you can do, want to do, or will do to try to take some control and to move forward given the results of the election?
I'm honestly still just really shocked by it all. But I think my family will just continue to do what we've always done, which is to just try to be good, honest people and set a good example and show that, you know, Muslim people, black people are just normal people like you and me, just trying to live their lives. And, just trying to be a good example, I guess.
Well, I appreciate you calling. I appreciate your sentiment. Carol is calling in from Westport. Hi, Carol. What are you thinking about?
about the national election also, because I think that the country will be divided for four very long years. The people who dislike Trump dislike him as much, as intensely as the ones who disliked Hillary. And I wasn't a Hillary supporter, but his divisiveness was so completely repulsive. And many of his supporters exhibit some of the same characteristics. Just as the lady that just spoke brought out, they're Islamophobic, sexist, racist. I mean, those are not people that I really prefer to associate with.
Carol, I appreciate your call as well today. Let's go to one more here from Bill in Eden. Hi, Bill. Go right ahead.
I hope I can lend some positivity and some solace to Maria. Every time these parties, and I'm taking the long-term historical view, every time the parties, the major parties, both of them, have met these crisis moments, whether it's Trump or the failure of Hillary to be elected and the Bernie insurrection in the Democratic side, every time this has happened in history, there has been positive change and reform within the parties. They have to come to these points in order to reform themselves to get back in touch with the very people they're supposed to be serving. So I wake up this morning, even though I have trepidation, knowing that history says there will be positive change in both parties who are about to enter into their own internal civil wars, political civil wars. So
yeah.
I'm optimistic.
Bill, thanks. Appreciate that. Anne Galloway, what are you thinking about this polarization, the fear that some people are feeling, and Bill saying this may lead to some change?
I think there's no question that it's going to lead to change, and people are going to have to think more clearly about how they're serving the public interest in both parties, because the country can't really function this way long term. And so hopefully both the Democrats and the Republicans will figure out how they can better respond to some of the serious issues that real people are facing, including the wealth disparity that has been described in some detail by Bernie Sanders and that's been touched on even by Trump. And I think people are really tired of the machine. I think they're tired of negative political ads. I get the sense that people are just sort of generally sick of the kind of power of money in politics and the fact that, you know, it doesn't seem like anybody's really looking out for the little guy. And that was really Trump's big appeal here, you know. And he was brilliant in the way he talked about that, even though, you know, there are many reasons to object to the things that he said regarding women and minorities. His message resonated with white voters, with working class people across America. I think it was interesting that he swept so many of the Midwestern states, which have such a strong manufacturing, farming, and union base. So people are really dissatisfied, I think, with the direction the country is going, and they just want change. And he's totally outside the system. He doesn't have any government experience. He's a TV star. And, you know, I think people really kind of threw the dice. It reminds me of I lived in Minneapolis for a year, and it happened to be the year that Jesse Ventura was elected governor. And he was a famous wrestler, and it reminds me a little bit of that. You know, they just threw the dice because people were sick of the status quo.
And I think the fact that Donald Trump was self-funded in the beginning went to his favor, because he wasn't beholden, he said, to the interests that you talked about, Anne. But the caller from Bradford, Maria, really reminds us that there are people this – so many people this directly affects. Think of all the people waiting in line for citizenship who are here undocumented, who have health care, and, you know, the changes that are going to confront them. And that's, you know, we just have to keep the human impact of all of this in mind.
the national results clearly a preoccupation for so many Americans and so many Vermonters today. When we come back here on Vermont Edition, we're going to pause for a moment, though, to look at some important local votes that were taken yesterday and the results. Wind, some issues in Burlington, and Act 46 district consolidation votes that were going on in various towns around the state. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We're chatting with a panel of Vermont journalists today about the results from Election Day. We're hearing from 7 Days' Paul Heintz, VT Diggers' Ann Galloway, and VPR News Director John Dillon. And from many of you, our number is 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your thoughts and reactions on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Last night, we were following votes in Windham and Grafton related to wind developments. Our Southern Vermont correspondent, Howard Weiss-Tisman, has been following that issue and joins us now for a few moments. Hello, Howard.
Hey, Jane.
So you were following these votes on the big Stiles Brook Wind Project. Can you just briefly remind us, this is a very large project that was perhaps going to be built in these towns.
Yeah, very large project, would have been Vermont's largest industrial wind project, 24 turbines, 500 feet high. And there were votes in Grafton and Windham, and both towns rejected the project. It's important to remember these were non-binding votes, and they would have been non-binding whichever way it went. So the landowner still can seek a developer. This developer, Iberdrola Renewables, can even go ahead and apply for a CPG, though they said they would not. But the developer said they would not apply for the state permits without approval of both towns, and both towns rejected it. So it seems like for now that this project is off the table.
So even though these were non-binding votes, Iberdrola said it is going to respect the will of the people in those towns.
Yep, that's what it said. I spoke to a spokesman last night, and he reiterated that. So I think it's interesting to look at these votes in the context of the discussions going on throughout the state on renewable energy. Our new governor-elect was opposed to Ridgeline wind development, and we have our new energy siting law that's kind of rolling out as this is all going on. So while the new law doesn't give towns veto power, these two very small towns, in fact, did have veto power. So I'm not entirely clear what it says, but it's interesting to look at how these votes kind of play off what's happening across the state with renewable energy.
Howard, you were also following some votes in towns that were looking at district consolidation under Act 46. Can you fill us in on the results there?
Yeah, there were three votes last night. Two were in favor of their district plans, and one was opposed. Grand Isle and Addison Northeast both approved the plans. The Barry plan was rejected. And what's interesting looking at these three votes is they really give a snapshot of the difference in the district plans across the state. In Grand Isle, three of the five towns said yes, and the plan still went forward. In Barry, there were only two districts involved, and one said no, so it was not. And then in Addison Northeast, all five of the towns approved it, and they're moving ahead. In Act 46's second phase, districts have until June 30th, July 1st of next year to get their plans together, and the Agency of Education expects another dozen or so plans to possibly go before voters at town meeting day or in the coming year.
Yeah, and that Addison Northeast Supervisory Union, those towns are Bristol, Lincoln, Moncton, New Haven, and Starksboro, all five voting yes, as Howard said. And up in the islands, Grand Isle, North Hero, and Lamotte were the ones who said yes. South Hero residents said no to joining the district, and Alberg didn't participate in the vote.
Yeah, so a lot of different plans there.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how this is shaping up around the state as different communities try to think about this issue of district consolidation.
Yeah, and the real tough discussions are coming with all of these holdouts and all these towns that are kind of kicking and screaming, and we'll see what happens in the next year or two with that.
Howard Weiss-Tisman is VPR's Southern Vermont correspondent. Howard, thanks.
Thank you.
And let's go over to Burlington now and find out what happened last night in Vermont's biggest city. We're joined by Alicia Fries, staff writer at 7 Days. Hi, Alicia.
Hey, Jane.
So in addition to the candidates, Burlington voters were asked to decide on 6 ballot items. All of them passed. Can you highlight what you think were the most important takeaways from that?
Yeah, I mean, everyone was pretty much focused on questions 3 and 4, and both of those pertain to this plan to turn the Burlington Town Center, which is a two-story suburban-style mall in Burlington. Most people are familiar with it. Turn it into this pretty big mixed-use project. The developer plans to invest $220 million in it, housing, office space, and more retail. So the first question was about a zoning change that he's asked for. And the most significant, there are a couple of different pieces to that, but the most significant change is raising the height limit in one section of the downtown to 160 feet. And that passed with 54% voting yes. And then the other question was whether the administration was asking for permission to use tax increment financing, $22 million of it, to fund some public infrastructure improvements associated with the project. And the main thing there is the restoration of the Pine Street and St. Paul Street, which have been cut off by the mall for decades. Those streets would be restored. And that also passed 59% voting for it.
So does the City Center project move forward without impediment, basically, now?
This was definitely the major hurdle it faced. I think it's fairly safe to say that it will move forward. The developer still has to go through the normal development review process, and he and the city council and the administration still have to finalize a development agreement. But this was the biggest barrier by far.
Alicia Fries is a staff writer at 7 Days. Thanks for the update. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
We're also talking today with 7 Days columnist and political editor Paul Heintz, VT Digger founder and reporter Anne Galloway, and VPR's news director John Dillon. Paul Heintz, I know you have to take off here as we're live in the 1 o'clock hour today to go cover a press conference from our new governor-elect, Phil Scott. But, you know, I'm curious, from your perspective, what else you think was important yesterday down ballot in Vermont? We know that Washington County Senator Bill Doyle, for example, 90 years old, has been in the Senate for years, lost his seat to Francis Brooks. Other issues that you think are important for Vermonters to know about?
Well, in the State House, that was really the biggest development. Senator Doyle has been in the Senate since 1969, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. He is just an unbelievable institution. In the Senate overall, Democrats and progressives picked up 2 seats. So they now control 23 out of 30. And Republicans have just 7. So they are going to be a force to be reckoned with for Governor-elect Scott. In the House, things stayed pretty steady. Democrats and Republicans both lost 1 seat. Those went to an independent, to a progressive, assuming current leads hold. But that's really not much of a change at all, although there are about 8 incumbents, I believe, who lost their races. Overall, I think, you know, my big takeaway here is that this is a really Vermont election. You had Vermonters electing a ponytailed organic farmer who's a progressive as their next lieutenant governor, a stock car racing Republican as their governor. And they sent, you know, a Democrat back to the Senate, to Congress, and overwhelmingly rejected Donald Trump for president. So I think that just goes to show that we're a ticket-splitting state. People get to know their candidates, do their research, and this is where they landed.
That's 7 Days columnist and political editor Paul Heintz. Paul, I'll release you. You can head off to the press conference. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Go get one of those cocktails first, I think.
Yeah, that sounds great. Paul, thanks for being here. You know, Paul mentioned David Zuckerman, obviously our new lieutenant governor-elect, a progressive Democrat. We actually have a little clip of him here speaking to supporters last night after claiming victory.
We have to create a just and fair society here in Vermont, and that's our responsibility. I take that responsibility very seriously. I look forward to working with all of you in the House and Senate so that we can make Vermonters' lives better. Thank you for all your efforts. Thank you for all your support. We're going to keep moving forward. Thank you very much.
John Dillon, when Phil Scott, now the governor-elect, was elected into the lieutenant governor's seat, Peter Shumlin, the new governor, made him part of the cabinet. Should we expect to see that in this case, Phil Scott making David Zuckerman part of the cabinet?
I don't think so. I think we'll find out, actually, key parts of the transition team in just a few minutes here. I don't know that it will include David Zuckerman as a regular member of the cabinet. I do. They do have a relationship. They serve together. They, you know, in the green room in the state house, they get along. It's what Phil Scott talks about is his ability to reach across the aisle. He'll obviously have to do that with such a divided government that he's facing. And these overwhelming Democratic majorities. His relationships with people like David Zuckerman are going to be key. And then there's also in the Senate, you know, there's a couple of more conservative Democrats, although not like there used to be, where they're sort of a middle-of-the-road block. But that's where Phil Scott will have to go.
Let's hear from Daniel, a listener calling in from Essex Junction. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for waiting.
Hello. I'd like to send a strong encouragement to both our senators, Pat Leahy and Bernie Sanders, to reach across the aisle, as you put it, to craft bipartisan legislation, not the usual stuff that comes out of the Republican-controlled House and Senate in Washington, and to basically to avoid extremes of either kind so as to have legislation that's acceptable to both sides. And if that's not possible or where it's not possible, don't be afraid to use the filibuster. After all, a plurality did vote for Hillary, and that really means that there is a mandate to work to the center, not to the extreme right. And and when you're called out for doing what the Republicans have been doing for years, filibustering practically everything on the agenda in the last several years, remind everybody that, in fact, a plurality of the public voted for the left, not the right.
Yeah, Daniel, thanks for your thoughts. I appreciate that. And, you know, the last numbers that we have, the latest numbers, actually show a slight lead for Hillary Clinton in the popular vote with 59,600,000, 327 to Donald Trump's 59,389,590, just to be very, very specific. But, you know, looking like Clinton actually got a little bit more of the popular vote than Donald Trump, as things have been counted so far, though he, of course, won with the Electoral College. Abby's calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Abby. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a local recent graduate of Montpelier High School, and I just wanted to get the perspective of a young person. This is my first time voting in election, and I think it was really fascinating, just the difference between, you know, now we've elected this racist bigot, basically, as our president, and that in coinciding with increasingly liberal youth, and people my age are increasingly respectful of differences between one another, and I just find it really fascinating that we're that is increasing at a time when this kind of atmosphere of hate and bigotry seems to be growing during Donald Trump's campaign, and now I assume will continue during his pregnancy
or his presidency. Yes, pregnancy would really be a headline. Abby, thanks for your call. Appreciate hearing from a first-time voter. Ann Galloway, final thoughts here. We're not really wrapping up anything except for this hour of Vermont Edition, but what are you thinking about?
Well, I think there is really a disconnect that Abby's identified, and that is that young people really do have a very strong sense of justice and an interest in a society that's very open for the most part. And so I think that there could be some conflicts coming forward, you know, as time goes on, if Trump does make the kinds of moves that he's talked about, you know, if he does decide to basically kick out immigrants, or if he decides to build a wall, if he decides to continue to speak in the way he has about women and about minorities, I think that could be trouble for him, because I don't think young people are going to put up with it.
Well, all of that remains to be seen. Right now, people still trying to digest the results, feeling happy or sad, depending on their politics, or maybe a very complicated mix of emotions. VT Digger founder and reporter Anne Galloway and VPR News Director John Dillon, thank you very much for being with us on what is a very long week. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jane.
Thank you, Jane.
You can find all of the results of up-ticket and down-ticket races, by the way, at vpr.net, including who won in your districts. If you don't know who's representing you, you might want to go to vpr.net and find out. You can see all the results there and look through our live blog. We want to thank a few colleagues who've really gone above and beyond in working on VPR's election coverage: Emily Alphen Johnson, Angela Evansy, Sarah Simon, and Taylor Dobbs. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rose, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.